Gold.
That's what we like to do on this show. Find the comedy gold. I just like
non-fungible as a word.
It is a good word.
It's a wonderful, it just has a good mouthfeel.
La-di-da, la-di-da, la-la.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
How do you feel about the non-binding voter questions on your ballot? 844-967-2789. Do you think much about them? Are they confusing? Do you never know whether or not that they have any teeth or not? How would you feel if they just went away entirely? Because that was tucked into the shared revenue bill last week. Did you know that, Jake?
I did not know that. And is this a big problem?
Well, it's not a big problem because potentially Governor Evers is just going to veto the entire shared revenue bill for what it looks like right now. But it was interesting because I finally saw today, WPR covered the story, but I saw it on some of the different listservs and newsletters I'm on for different groups in Wisconsin raising the alarm last week. As far as this being a big problem, that the Republicans would like to do away with groups who organize to get a measure on their municipality at the county level, a non-binding question that's there to basically show popularity for a certain issue.
It's a pulse check, right?
A pulse check. I mean, you know, statewide, the non-binding referendum, what this last election was the question about, should able-bodied adults who don't have children who are receiving welfare have to look for work? That was a statewide question that even though it had the majority of people voted yes, nothing's actually changed. It's just there to show popularity. But more often than a statewide referendum, as usually you see them at the city or county level. And I would be interested to know, would this make a big difference to you of whether or not, because the truth is when they pass, nothing actually changes. It's non-binding.
Yeah, it doesn't go into law.
And so, but it is a mechanism that is there for people to communicate with their elected officials to say, hey, we want this. And often in Wisconsin, when it feels like we have a lot of elected officials who are in very safe seats, they don't have to listen to us. So it becomes a thing to be able to point to say, look how many people want this. Why aren't you bringing this up in the legislature? Why aren't you voting on this way? Why aren't you proposing bills that would bring this to you? Because otherwise, you know, if you called your state representative and no one responds to you, it's kind of like a bear pooping in the woods, right? 844-967-2789. How do you feel about non-binding voter questions? Are you attached to them or do you feel like you maybe wouldn't know the difference?
Well, and in what you just said, I think you perfectly encapsulated why some elected officials want to get rid of them.
Oh, certainly.
Because it makes them look bad. Because it makes them
Absolutely.
Look like they are not responding to what their constituents want. So rather than have to go through this process of these non-binding referendums and then saying, hello, you know, like you said, this is what we want. Well, they don't want to have to do that anymore because it embarrasses them. So now they're just not going to let you ask the question at all.
At all. But yeah, so it's a new bill that would change how the state distributes funds to local communities. So it's the shared revenue bill, but it came with a two-line provision that would prohibit a town, city, or county from holding an advisory referendum. And as we said, these are non-binding questions for voters that gauge public opinion on issues. And so activists from across the political spectrum have used them to demonstrate when there's popularity for something or opposition to something. And so it's been There's been multiple since last year when Roe got overturned for abortion rights. There's plenty that's come pop up all the time for legal marijuana. But there's also like local transportation measures. Last fall, there was one about universal health care. Like it's, you know, it's people have to organize and get signatures to get it on the ballot. But there's now, you know, and people on both sides of the aisle have used them. But now the GOP wants them on the chopping block and put tucked it into their shared revenue proposal that was unveiled last week. And some left-wing activists say that this is going to cost them a key tool for promoting their agenda and engendering bipartisan support for certain projects. But, you know, Robin Voss was basically like, this is not what our elections are supposed to be about.
But it's non-binding.
Yeah. And so he basically, this was, I mean, Robin Voss, we could also have a whole segment probably on, he had a luncheon on Friday of all the different things he talked about. He called Donald Trump a loser, which I was like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder if he got a call about that. He also basically said if he could go back in time, he wouldn't hire Gableman.
But he would have hired somebody else.
Yes.
Because the election still needed to be looked at.
Sure. So yeah. maybe that's why, because we talked last week about how the there was no movement on the motion to have more oversight over taxpayer funded investigations like the Gableman one.
Right.
And they shot that down. And so that will not be happening. And we were like, why would they not? Because do you admit that you did something wrong by saying, yeah, maybe the Assembly and the Senate should vote on this before just one person can appoint someone and give them a budget? And so I was like, well, we said last week, we said, well, maybe they're doing this because he would admit that Robin Voss was wrong. But he did. I mean, I guess you're right. He did say he shouldn't have hired Michael Gableman.
Gableman. Yes. Not that the investigation was wrong, but Gableman was the wrong guy.
But his quote on this specific, his problem with non-binding local referenda was, that's not the point. That's what elections are about. We should have had advisory referenda only for things that are directly related to what is being done in that municipality. And so it's basically saying that, you know, those kinds of things should only, because, you know, it's like, when I forgot which county put universal health care on their ballot, but obviously they can't put universal health care. Like they're not going to be able to do that on a local level. It's just showing popularity for it.
Right.
But like, I don't think we should get rid of it. I think this is important. I think it's important, especially in this state right now where so many people feel like they're not heard by their representatives. To be able to show popularity for something, I think is a good thing. I think there's some criticism saying like this is used to like bolster voter turnout in low turnout races. It's like, why is that a bad thing? why would that ever be considered a bad thing we're trying to increase voter turnout?
You want everybody who can vote to vote? What the heck is wrong with you, Kristen?
I know.
That's so.
I know. What? But you know, cause we still don't have directly binding initiatives. We're only one of like half the states. We're one of 24 states where voters cannot directly add binding initiatives to ballots. And you know, I think that there's some pros and cons to that as well. Cause I think having lived in California where there's constantly propositions that, you know, which side has the best campaign to like the information campaign. Like there's pros and cons for that too. But I do think because there's not that much to lose or gain, like why get rid of it?
Well, because they want to keep ignoring what their constituents want, but they just don't want it to be so obvious. So instead of actually seeing a photo of Robin Voss with his fingers in his ears going, na, 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 I can't hear you. He just doesn't want you to be able to see that. He's still not going to listen to you. It just won't be so obvious. Because it's so obvious. Well, it's uncomfortable, Kristen.
Is it, though? I feel like they have no problem just doing bulldozing and doing what they want at this point, right? Like, there's been so many times where it's, whether it's, you know, 70 out of 72 counties have passed that they want fair maps, whether it's the, you know, just annihilation Janet had of Dan Kelly of 11 points in this last race, like, of its 14 out of the last 17 races, statewide races, Democrats have won. Like, there's so many indicators of where the majority of Wisconsin stands on things, and yet they feel, it's one of those things where it's like, do they believe the hype? Like, how many of, like, not the hype, that's not the word that I wanted to use. Like, you know how sometimes, bear with me, because I'm fleshing this out.
All right.
As I'm coming up with it live on air. So here's a peek into what my brain works like before I actually think things through. There's like, I was listening to this thing, because you know how last week Nicolas Cage said something like how he has memories of being in his mother's womb?
Okay.
And I was listening to, I think, Love It or Leave It, the podcast, and they were joking about how this is actually, celebrities saying stupid things like that is actually our fault, because we don't hold them accountable, because they're in such like ice, like insulated little bubbles of their own little echo chamber, so they can say just off the wall things, and like no one, like they're surrounded by yes men.
Sure.
And so it's like, for some of the Republican lawmakers in Wisconsin, are they just like so tightly indoctrinated, like in their echo chamber, and like not been actually held accountable for anything, and not ever in fear of like losing their jobs, that they're just convinced that they're right? Or do they know that they're getting away with this?
Oh, I think they know they're getting away with it. And that's
so
why,
you don't think,
and that's why they don't want to see him anymore, because it makes him look icky. Just get rid of the thing that's making me look bad, and then we can go on with life as usual.
Yeah. So I don't know. This doesn't seem, I mean, it seems important, but it's also kind of feels like this, the Secretary of State election, where it's like, well, it's important, but I don't really know what it does. It doesn't really do anything, but like, it's like the symbolism of it that we want to keep. Right.
And taking this away would not be good. I don't think that's a good idea.
Well, what's good, I guess, is for now, I'm not sure this was the reason that Evers was like, I'm going to veto the shared revenue bill in its totality, but the fact that it's tucked in there and the whole bill might get vetoed unless it's reworked a little bit, maybe this is not as much of a threat. All right, well, some other election news and voting news and how hard it is to vote in Wisconsin when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And we are just rolling through this Monday, May 8th, and wrapping up our conversation around non-binding referendums and whether or not towns and cities and counties should be able to put them on your ballot, even if they don't change anything. I would say it's still important to have the function of being able to organize and get them on your ballot, but apparently GOP lawmakers disagree with that.
They don't like that. 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY, whenever you want to check in from the 414. It's interesting, the GOP does whatever it can to try to limit everyone else's ability to practice free speech, voicing their opinions through the ballot box, or whether it's just an idea. Yeah, they don't want to hear it. La 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 la. No, I don't want to hear.
Apparently. And this was interesting from Cap Times. I guess it was Wisconsin Watch, and I found it in the Cap Times. But Wisconsin has dropped from fourth to 47th in voter access ranking.
Wrap your head around that.
That's wild. Fourth to 47th. That's, yeah. So it's basically over the course of 30 years. This wasn't like a last year to this year, but the state's transformed from one of the easiest places to cast a ballot 30 years ago to one of the most difficult. And the trend is particularly pronounced among Black and Latino voters. Mm. And what's interesting is in the article, they go through, and we'll go through some of them too, the different changes and measures that have happened that have made it harder to vote. But one of the things that they also bring up, as far as, it's also election fatigue. Like, we have, in 2022, we had four elections, you know, with the primary process. We're constantly telling people, get out and vote, basically every 6 months. Like, we won't this year. We have the rest of 2023 off.
Thank God.
But then, you know, there'll be nonpartisan races in the spring next year for mayors and county boards and city councils. And then we're going to have a state, a Senate race, a U.S. Senate race with Tammy Baldwin. Undetermined who's going to run against her, and another presidential race next year. And then the spring after that, in 2025, we're going to have a Supreme Court race again. And then in 2026, we're going to have midterms. Like, it's a lot. and so some of the evidence as far as like why it's gotten harder to vote is partially increased difficulty to voters, but it's also just election fatigue. And so, but yeah, so for 20 years, Wisconsin was a model for making the voting process easy. But then I'll let you guess when that started to change.
I would say 2010.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, just let me see if I have who was elected governor at that time might have been Scott Walker.
Ah, yes. Yes. Ah. And the Republican legislature. Ah. But they pretty quickly implemented several measures that made voting more difficult. So they extended residency requirements, shortened the time frame for early voting, increased residency requirements from 10 to 28 days, and enacted the state's voter ID law, which after several court challenges took effect in 2016. More recently, the state Supreme Court disallowed ballot drop boxes, even as some states expanded use, pushing Wisconsin even further down that list. And so, you know, in just to remind you that they're saying that they're doing this because they're trying to make it easier to vote, but harder to cheat, that from 2012 to 2022, there were 48 general, primary, and special elections in Wisconsin.
Okay, that's quite a few.
Prosecutors brought 192 election fraud cases, which equals 0.0006% of all votes cast.
Oh, that seems like an awfully small number.
Very small number. Mm. Of those, 40 cases dealt with fraudulent actions like double voting or voting in the name of a dead person. The data didn't show that the new laws had reduced the number of cases, the majority of which related to voting, often by mistake, by those on probation for a felony conviction.
Who thought they could vote, but they couldn't vote.
Thought they could vote and couldn't vote. So that is the majority of those 192 election fraud cases over 48 elections, making up 0.0006% of votes cast were mostly people who voted and didn't realize that they still were not allowed to vote because they were still on probation or still had fines, et cetera, that they had to pay off to get to be reenfranchised. We'll say it that way.
The talk about voter fraud has always been there to make it harder for people to vote because there is no evidence still of widespread voter fraud. There's not. Because it doesn't exist. But that was a very popular selling point.
Very, very popular. Some people very, very still in on that selling point.
Oh, yeah.
As far as you just peruse Twitter every once in a while. But yeah, 4th to 47th. That is quite the drop. I'm not sure there's anything that we've dropped that fast in. That we were that good and now that bad. But She is. All right. Well, when we come back, did you know that Ford is talking about getting rid of your AM radio in their new models? For a show that airs on AM radio, we don't want that to happen.
That would be
bad. We also think that potentially farmers don't want that to happen. So we are going to have Pam Jahnke from the Midwest Farm Report back on the show to talk about how this would impact farmers and people in more rural areas and why Ford should really reconsider before they just get rid of AM radio in their new cars. So stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And we want to save AM radio. Last month, Ford Motor Company announced that it's preparing to move AM radio in most of its new and updated 2024 models, despite concerns from U.S. officials over Americans losing access to safety alert broadcasts over the airwaves, let alone this show, because we air on AM radio across the state of Wisconsin. And so here to talk about why this is concerning and also just dumb is Pam Jahnke, Farm Director of the Midwest Farm Report Network. Welcome back, Pam.
Thanks, kids. Glad to be along with you on a Monday.
Yeah. So, you know, this feels one of the things I would say as far as I didn't necessarily see myself in radio. I was on TikTok and stuff like that. And I think as I've learned more and more about radio in Wisconsin is how many people still rely on radio. When you think about broadband issues and you think about so many rural areas, a part of this state, when people jump in their car, mostly a lot of people in this state still listen to is FM or AM radio. And so this feels like negligence almost that that Ford and potentially other car companies are thinking that, oh, we don't need it anymore.
Right. Let me tell you what we've been told as farm broadcasters on the motivation behind a lot of this. The big companies, not just Ford, but this also involves Volkswagen, Volvo, Audi, BMW, Porsche, Tesla. Their contention is that as we continue to kind of migrate toward electric vehicles, that AM radio, just by its sheer nature, runs into static problems within that electric circle. So if you're an electric car, there's interference between frequencies and the car. So that's one of the reasons why they say that they want to pull AM radio off of that dashboard. That's the pure science of what they're claiming. I'm not sure how hard they've worked to mitigate some of that interference. But the bottom line is they're using that as their crutch to try to remove the AM radio platform from the dashboard. Now, I'm going to guess that a lot of your audience, despite the fact that they may be listening to AM radio, are also saying, well, stream it online. You know, that's well and good if you're in a place where you can catch an internet signal, if you've got strong enough broadband. But according to the National Association of Broadcasters, there's, like you said, 80-some million people that depend on AM radio just by virtue of where they live. A lot of that is relative to where a cell tower is, where broadband access is. And obviously, you know, AM radio, part of the reason why AM radio is so strong in rural communities, and especially for my agriculture audience, is its nature of strength of signal. I'm very old compared to your audience, I'm sure. But I remember as a kid on the farm, one of the things I used to do as a kid was lay upstairs in the farmhouse and I could listen to, and now remember, my home farm is north of Green Bay, 26 miles. Okay. And I could hear WGN, WLS out of Chicago. I could hear WOR out of Boston. I could hear all kinds of radio stations at night on the AM signal, because that is the nature of the AM signal. And I can go into a whole bunch of reasons why those three initial stations are the ones that carry. But the bottom line is the nature of the AM signal is what really built how farmers depended on it, continue to depend on it. And then there's the issue of safety that Jane kind of alluded to. As soon as this started getting discussed, believe me, farm broadcasters were not the first involved in this conversation. The first was the FCC noting safety concerns. Let's stop and think about what happens when a Katrina comes around. Mm-hmm. What happens when these natural disasters, tornadoes rip through the terrain, tearing down power lines, tearing through cell towers, tearing through FM towers to a large extent. People can still put batteries in a radio and get those important announcements. Your cell phone may run out of juice. Yep. You may, you know, that's people will then, what do? Get in their car and listen to the radio. And they are concerned that in those natural disaster emergencies, or heaven knows what kind of disaster, that if the car manufacturers are allowed to sever this line of communication, that it bodes very poorly for our emergency response, our emergency management plans. And that I was really surprised. Farm broadcasters are stepping in with the National Association of Broadcasters to not only educate ourselves, but find out who else is involved in the conversation. And boy, you start talking, and I'm not just talking about FEMA managers in places like New Orleans or where, you know, the Joplin or something like that. This is FEMA on the federal scene that is concerned. They say they've lived it where they've gone into places where floods, tornadoes, hurricanes, whatever the case may be, have really crippled a communication system. And they said radio is by far the number one way that they try to restore not only confidence in the community, but also connectedness on where resources are and what the latest information is. So, like I said, for us that have been in radio, maybe to us it seems like common sense. You don't want to sever this tie. But I know that there's a lot of young people, or, well, anybody that's exposed to technology, and you think technology has got that answer. And a lot of federal officials and a lot of folks that live in rural communities would beg to differ.
Absolutely. We're talking to Pam Yonke, who is the farm director of the Midwest Farm Report, and we're talking about news that AM radio might be phased out in newer and newer car models. And I hadn't heard that that's the reason, as far as it's, and it feels like in all the technology and all the smart people working on these cars, they'd be able to figure out this problem. Well,
and yeah, I posted this on my Facebook page, Fabulous Farm Babe, and was just kind of watching what people had to say. And, you know, there's some people that say, you know, who listens to AM radio anymore? Well, obviously, you're somebody that's exposed to good FM signals, as well as probably cell phone technology. You're probably able to sit at a desktop or a laptop and stream whatever you want. Good for you. That's not the case everywhere. And then there were a lot of people that, again, cited the concerns about what happens if the cell towers are down, if my cell phone is out of juice and my power grid is down. You still have that option. You know, I was telling somebody else and they said, yeah, I remember when I was a kid, I had a hand crank radio because that was your backup when you went camping. You know, you're up in the great woods, you know, there's no power, right? And you're not from around there, but if you can hand crank your radio, you can pick up a local signal that will kind of get you going on what's happening with the weather. You know, tornado watch over here, because your cell phone may not get those emergency alerts when you're doing something like camping in a remote area like that. So, as I said, it's not just an issue that impacts farm broadcasters. It's an issue that's being discussed a lot by obviously all broadcasting, the engineers that are involved in broadcasting. And most importantly, and I really think the voice that needs to speak up louder are those federal emergency managers that have everything, you know, when a disaster comes to your area, everything goes wrong. Mm-hmm. Everything goes wrong. The last thing I would think you'd want to give up is a tool that can help you get people to resources, correct information and updates to connect them and console them.
Pam, you are so right. And I just think about radio is critical in those moments, and especially in these smaller communities and more far-flung communities. Community radio is what These are the roads that are closed. These are the power lines that are down. Stay away from this area. Stay away from this. Stay away from that. I think it's a really short-sighted decision for them to pull these out of cars. And have to think too, there are people far smarter than me because I still don't understand how radio actually works. But I know they can figure out how to have it in an electric car so there's not so much static. There's got to be somebody. Come on.
Well, like you said, I think a lot of it right now is very little financial motivation. Sometimes I think they cite a lot of times today, AM and FM stations are simulcast. They also talk about, you know, where is advertising moving? Now, that's their way of justifying why they want to take it off the dashboard. Mm-hmm. Our contention is that it's not about, don't look at our industry and revenue sources to make a decision for your industry and something that could probably be fixed with another layer of insulation someplace at certain connector points. And let's face it, if you've seen some of these dashboards in any of these vehicles, the selection you have is only growing. So why do you have to take one away when you've still got so many that are up there? And, you know, I haven't had the good fortune of being in a Tesla or a Porsche to find out how these new dashboards are working or anything like that. But my contention would be that it's the same situation. Just because that's offered to you and you're driving across, you know, the Rockies, or you're out in the Central Plains, just because that tool is on the dashboard does not mean that you're going to have access to that internet, to that streaming. You know, that's why they said satellite radio was going to kill traditional radio, because it's everywhere. Well, the catch is you've got to pay for all those things. Yep. That's the other item that nobody is really discussing. Radio is free. You want to go satellite? God bless you. But radio is free, meaning now you're not only talking about, you heard the brands of cars that I named, Porsche, BMW, Audi. Okay. But if you start pulling those kinds of tools as far as communication away, think about the economic rift that you're creating again. You know, they have their cell phones. Cell phones are gone. Now, potentially the radio side of things gets questionable. So there's a lot of discussion that's really gotten stirred up about this. And I'm glad to say that a lot of farmers and agribusinesses, farm organizations have been vocal about it, because when you're bouncing along, this is the perfect time of the year for farmers to stop and think about that. When you are trying to plant seed, you know, you're going out and you're going from dawn until dusk, the only companion you have out there is that radio.
Yeah.
Sports radio is a big thing. A lot of farmers, what are you going to do? Listen to the Brewers game, or listen to, you know, a football game, or listen to high school sports. And a lot of that takes place on AM radio. So like I said, farmers and our agribusiness folks are probably very, very close to this, because that is their companion: milk and cows, plant and seed, driving truck.
844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. If you want to check in on this, Stephen from Green Bay joins us. Hey, Stephen, what do you want to say?
Is that Pam Yonke I hear on the radio?
It is.
You know, welcome to Green Bay, Pam. I actually grew up listening to you in the Portage area and the Madison stations there, and saw you on WISD every once in a while. And I slept on my radio, and I'm like, this is a blast from the past, listening to Pam Yonke on my radio dial. So I just wanted to check in and say hello.
Well, excellent. Appreciate that, Steve.
All right, Stephen, thanks a lot. We also have Ron from Milwaukee is joining us. Hey, Ron, what do you want to say?
Hey, I'm in my car driving, and I have a fancy electric car, and I've got AM and FM on it. And yes, AM sometimes encounters static, but you know what? It's not just from the engine. It's from high tension lines that are everywhere, and it's from cell phone towers that are everywhere. You know, at home, I used to have an antenna to pick up weak AM signals from other cities, and there are little filters you could buy at Radio Shack that would filter out that interference. I can't imagine those filters costing more than a few bucks. You're talking about a stupid little circuit in an electronic board that is, you know, is the radio board. It's not, they're not going to save any money by leaving this out. I think this is a prestige thing for them when people call in and say, I love my car, but the radio has static on it. It's like, well, grow up, you know. I mean, FM has static too. In Milwaukee, I listen to WAUK on AM because it's got a better signal than the FM rebroadcast station, which is 101.1. But sometimes
Ron, we gotta let you go because we're going to a commercial. We gotta say bye to Pam.
Yep,
but
sorry.
Pam, I'm a little surprised that you don't drive a Tesla, I'm gonna say.
Or pickup truck, gotta watch out for that though.
Exactly. All right. Well, we'll keep you up to date as we have progress on this, but always lovely to have you on the show, Pam. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
All right. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And we're going to wrap up our conversation around AM radio potentially going away. Sad.
From cars. 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. Jim from Appleton, you are a theater tech guy.
Yeah, I did that for quite a few years with community theater, and it wasn't uncommon to have to deal with interference for all of the cordless microphones that everybody's enamored with nowadays. And it always came down to shielding. Pam called it insulation. The gentleman from Milwaukee called it a filter. But it's unshielded wires, like the high-tension wires, create interference. And what they're worried about, or why they want to get rid of it, is putting the proper shielding around their motors and wires to protect the AM signal would cost money.
Oh, it always comes
back to money.
So it's not quite so simple, Jim, as just, I'm just going to put this little piece of special tape around this thing and we're done.
Well, it could be, but an electric car's got a lot of electric parts.
Right.
So they're going to have to... It'll require a little bit more shielding, a little bit more care when they're soldering everything together.
All right, that makes sense.
So, it would be a little more expensive.
Thank you so much for checking in, Jim. We really appreciate it. Again, anytime you want to call, you can text 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY.
Probably talk to Jim more about theater. I do know that of like whenever you have like a lav mic on or like the feedback from a mic. And I feel like sometimes it's like your cell phone or you were trying to figure out, you do that dance with a microphone of like, where do I need to stand to not have it like scream in people's ears? And you kind of like,
you got to get away from the speaker.
Awkwardly move.
Yeah. You got to get away from the speaker. But that makes sense.
All right. Well, that makes sense. So are you ready to witness a showdown between Tucker Carlson and Fox News? Because I sure am. So apparently, over the weekend, this was yesterday, this is from Axios, scoop, Tucker Carlson ready to torch Fox News. Dun, dun, dun!
Oh, nicely done.
I wasn't aware of this until I read this. But Tucker Carlson, Fox is paying Tucker Carlson $20 million basically to hold his contract so he can't go anywhere else.
Wow.
Yeah. So like we were at, you know, immediately, where will he go? Well, right now he can't go anywhere. And so I guess he is preparing to unleash his allies to attack Fox News in an effort to bully the network into letting him work for or start a right-wing rival, rival. And his lawyer, who's also the same lawyer as Don Lemon hired, Brian Friedman, who is a high-powered Hollywood lawyer, told Axios, the idea that anyone is going to silence Tucker and prevent him from speaking to his audience is beyond preposterous.
Oh, it's beyond.
And so, you know, Tucker versus Fox, this is a big deal as far as like how it could shape the conservative news world. And, you know, Fox has basically seen its ratings plunge since Carlson left.
In his hour, certainly. Yeah.
In his hour. Yeah, for sure. And they're paying him $20 million a year to not work. And so Axios has also learned that Carlson is busy plotting a media empire of his own, but he needs Fox to let him out of his contract, which expires in January 2025.
Ooh, after the election.
After the presidential election.
Oh.
And he's been, they were told that he's been contacted by Rumble, which I didn't even know what that was, but I guess it's a right-wing outlet, and Newsmax, and they offered to pay him more than his Fox contract. I guess he's also, this is a very juicy, I feel like this is like the TMZ of conservative news and gossip. So Axios has also learned that Carlson and Elon Musk had a conversation about working together, but didn't discuss specifics. He's also, he being Tucker, also contemplating building a direct-to-consumer media outlet where his millions of fans could pay to watch him. I would believe that. Bill O'Reilly, I guess, created a blueprint for this, for what he's doing right now.
Yeah, but is Bill O'Reilly really anything anymore?
I don't know. Like, I don't know what his numbers are, but like, you know, Megyn Kelly started her podcast and she's talking straight. I don't know if people are paying to do her thing, but like, she got enough of it. She's still somewhat relevant, right? Even though she left, you know, she left Fox and she had a big deal with NBC. Then she got $60 million to basically get off of NBC. And now she's doing her own thing. And I don't know, you know, it's like, I don't know how big of an audience for some of these people who are used to talking to millions and millions of people every night. What is a big enough audience to give you that adrenaline rush? You know what I mean? Like, because I don't know, you think about how many people we talk to every day, and we don't know for sure, but it's certainly not that many. And we still do it, and we still love doing it. And, you know, for them, is it just the fact of having a platform, whether you create it yourself or go to another network, to be able to reach your audience, even if it's not as big? And so I would imagine for people like Bill O'Reilly and Megyn Kelly, that's part of it. But for Tucker, I think it's kind of the first time that it's being challenged that, like, maybe the man is bigger than the platform.
It could very well be, because again,
I don't really know if there's been another example of a personality that has done this well.
I just want to know, what could he possibly expose about Fox that would make them look worse than they do? Is that even possible?
Yeah, and that's what's interesting when they say he's preparing to unleash his allies to attack Fox News.
Okay.
Like, what would that look like?
Exactly. What does that entail? You're going to make them look worse? Really?
I guess to look worse to whom? To the people who...
The base,
I suppose. They could be losing their audience, who are already leaving the audience, and so they just will purge more ratings? But I don't know. I don't know. I don't pretend to be like a mind reader for conservative news consumers.
I just want to point out, in case anyone is interested, I've been doing radio for 42 years. No one has ever paid me $20 million to go away. And I would be open to that.
Would you?
$20 million? I might consider it briefly.
Me too. I mean, we were talking about $7 million on Friday to stay in the closet, which Todd Alba said he would definitely take.
Right.
So, $20 million just to go away.
Just go away, Jane.
Yeah.
Go away.
$20 million a year.
To go away.
To go away. To just go take a vacation. Just go chill. Hang out. Go to Saint-Tropez. Just do something else for a couple years until this contract is over. But nope, can't do it. Ego's too big. I got to talk to my audience. The people need him.
They need him. They do.
The people need Tucker.
They do.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. And when we come back, Let's talk about your teachers and who you appreciate, either from your childhood or maybe your kids' teachers now, because it's Teacher Appreciation Week and they deserve all the love and respect. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.